call to order the very lonely, very small committee on House Environment and Water, and we are going to open the. I am going to open the public hearing on House Bill 3060. We are going to open the public hearing on House Bill 3060. This bill was carried over from Tuesday's agenda. It relates to product stewardship, sets up a framework, and includes batteries and mercury-containing light bulbs in the version before us. And I have the witness list from Tuesday, and I will be working from that. So to begin, I'd like Betsy Earls, Fawn McNeely, Jim Craven, and Paul Cosgrove to come up. If any of them are in the hallway, perhaps someone can grab them and let them know it's their turn. We'll be using the clock, picking up where we left off with 3 minutes per person. And starting with that panel of four in any order. So, Ms. Earls. Yep.
How do you do that? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Did you say we're still on the 3 minute?
We are still on the 3 minute, yeah.
Okay.
We have, I think, as folks know, we have 6 bills scheduled for today's hearing, and I intend to get through them all, so
okay.
We're going to move quickly.
I didn't time myself on this, so just stop me. For the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Retail Council in opposition to House Bill 3060. House Bill 3060 would make it illegal to sell certain products in the state unless they have DEQ-approved take-back programs for disposal. Producers could include, among as well as manufacturers, also retailers who have house brands of the items designated in the bill, as well as those that would be designated by DEQ later on. We have several problems with this approach. Products that DEQ proposes to regulate already have voluntary take-back programs established by manufacturers. Many of these are in operation in our retail stores in Oregon. For example, the cell phone and rechargeable battery industries have created take-back programs that make it easy for consumers to drop their old phones, batteries, and accessories at any retail outlet free of charge. Cell phone companies take the proceeds from recycling of the devices and make donations to charitable organizations. These companies would much rather see these nonprofit organizations benefit than spend the proceeds on complying with unnecessary state programs. County governments and landfills throughout Oregon currently operate effective programs to collect and dispose of hazardous household waste. It would be better to support consumer recycling and industry efforts than to impose costly, punitive statutory requirements. Additionally, small local retailers would be impacted. The bill includes onerous, unrealistic requirements that retailers give customers notice of recycling opportunities for each regulated product. And I think you'll hear more about that from Ms. McNeely and NFIB. So I'll close and just know that we are willing to work with you on this bill, but at this point, as drafted, we're entirely in opposition.
Thank you, Betsy. And let me just clear, who, according to your understanding of the bill, who designates products for this program?
My understanding of the bill is that DEQ and EQC would work through a process to choose, and then they would report to the legislature, and the bill couldn't be included on the regulated list unless the legislature approved.
So the legislature would actually have to approve the addition of a product?
I believe so, because it looks to me like the product can only be regulated if it's placed under Section 6 in the bill, and only the legislature can place the product under Section 6.
Okay.
Is that?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thanks very much. Let's go on.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven representing Tech America, the nation's largest trade association representing the high-tech industry. We are the successor organization to what you have known in the past as AEA due to a national merger. So from now on, I am Tech America in the building, but it's the same basic folks. As a participant over the last, decade or so on the development of Oregon's e-waste and computer recycling program that Mr. Chair was a key driver in last session, and I spent sort of how I spent my interim trying to get that program up and working. I just wanted, and there were a lot of parallels drawn to that program for this idea, I want to point out a few areas where I think it's a different, slightly different conversation, particularly on the area of rechargeable batteries. Rechargeable batteries, compared to their much larger, bulkier, and complex computers and televisions and monitors, do not represent a significant portion of the solid waste stream. And batteries, as I think you heard from Mr. Weinberg's testimony on Tuesday, are actually getting cleaner and greener every day. The biggest issue with batteries was mercury in the old days and alkaline batteries. That's been fairly well regulated out of existence. And the federal government addressed issues involving NiCad batteries in a federal battery act several years ago. I don't think, unlike the e-waste debate, that there is a giant public outcry pleading with you to find a solution. I know with e-waste, you were getting a lot of people, legitimately so, saying, what do I do with my old computer? What do I do with my TV set? I think there was a lot of public driver for that solution. I don't hear that with batteries at this point. I think when we did the e-waste bill in the 2007 session, it was the result of a 6 to 8 year conversation among a broad set of stakeholders. We learned that batteries would be dropped into this bill just before Christmas. So, again, I don't know that we have done our homework on this to throw batteries into this process right away. And I think also with the e-waste bill, there was substantial, not universal, but substantial industry support from some of the biggest players in that business. And finally, as you heard from the recycling battery group on Tuesday, there is a ubiquitous solution today in place in Oregon. Over 800 collection sites in Oregon today, totally funded by industry without any taxpayer dollars or any cost to consumers. I think when you have such a solution, when an industry steps up to solve a problem, quite frankly, to head off state-by-state regulatory programs, does the right thing, gets ahead of the game, for them to be told, well, thank you for stepping up. Now we'd like to overlay a state-mandated solution on top of what you've already done voluntarily, I think sends a pretty negative message to other people who may wish to step up in the future and bring solutions that don't need DEQ oversight, fees, penalties, product bans, and the like. So to the general bill, I think if the agency and stakeholders want to bring issues to this legislature, they're free to do so at any time, do the pre-work with stakeholders, and bring you, I mean, the bill does presume that they have to bring you solutions anyway. I think part of having the bill and sort of the two-per-session mandate kind of creates a bit of a bounty hunting mentality that DEQ will be compelled to bring you two new products every session. I think they can do that now, and if they work with stakeholders, maybe we can bring you solutions.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Fawn McNeely. I'm here representing NFIB. NFIB opposes House Bill 3060 for many of the reasons outlined by AOI, but I wanted to bring your attention to Section 11, which is our main area of concern. Section 11 would harm small local retailers by including requirements that retailers constantly check a DEQ website before placing orders for products in the product stewardship program. For a small retailer, this would be an added burden, and they could ultimately be subjected to penalties. Retailers would have to check this website each time they place an order in case products that previously had approved programs have been removed. Section 11 also includes a requirement that retailers give consumers notice of recycling opportunities for each regulated product. If the bill passes and rechargeable batteries are regulated, each retailer in Oregon that sells rechargeable batteries would be responsible for providing information to their customers about where to recycle each brand. Depending on the number of products that ultimately end up in the proposed product stewardship program, there could be an enormous amount of information small retailers will be required to distribute. NFIB's members are concerned about any legislation this session that increases the cost of doing business in Oregon. For those reasons and other reasons that you will hear later today, we oppose House Bill 3060. Thank you for your time.
Thanks. Do you want to just comment? You guys can stay here because there may be questions for all four. I'm sorry, there isn't really room for four people up here, but it was a natural panel, so I decided to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. I was outside the room in another hearing when I was called, and I appreciate you allowing me to come and testify about this bill. My name is Paul Cosgrove, and I'm representing four different clients on this bill: the American Forest and Paper Association, Soap and Detergent Association, Procter & Gamble, and the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers. If you've read the bill, you notice that none of those organizations' products are specifically listed in this bill, and I'd like to tell you why they are concerned about it. And to do that, I'd like to give an illustration that builds off something you heard from Mr. Craven a few minutes ago. I, too, was involved, not as thoroughly as Mr. Craven was, at least initially, but in the 2005 session and in the 2007 session, intimately and fervently involved in the e-waste debate. I helped a local Oregon manufacturer, one of our best corporate citizens in a high-tech company, kill the 2005 producer responsibility bill with bipartisan and rather overwhelming opposition, and then pass the 2007 producer responsibility bill with a vote of, I believe, I haven't checked the record, 90 to nothing. I was going to say 60 and 30. And that reflects that producer responsibility works well in certain circumstances if it's done in certain ways and works horribly in other ways. The concern that people who are not covered by this bill at this point have is it sets out a process that's sort of a cookie-cutter process with a whole lot of hoops and procedures and requirements that may very well, and it's based primarily on what we did with e-waste last session, it may very well work for that kind of product in that kind of a distribution system with that kind of consumer use and that kind of appropriate collection system. It certainly does not work well for every product. Our position is if there are particular problems with particular products, particular issues that need to be addressed, they should be addressed in cooperation with the industry, but in a system that works for how that product is manufactured, how it's distributed, how it's retailed, and how it's currently collected. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you all for respecting the short time lines that we're under today. Appreciate your testimony. Let's see if there's any questions. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's move on to Holly Sears, John Powell, and Jeff Bissonette, if he's here. I don't know that I saw John and Holly. Why don't you begin? We'll give Jeff a chance to come in if he's in the hallway and can make it in, but why don't either of you begin?
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, my name is Holly Sears, and I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, known as ORA. ORA is a statewide trade association representing private solid waste management companies in Oregon. ORA members collect and process most of Oregon's residential and curbside garbage and recyclables, as well as operate material recovery facilities and many of Oregon's solid waste transfer stations and landfills. ORA appreciates the efforts of DEQ and the committee for considering a product stewardship approach to managing the waste stream. However, ORA does have some questions about House Bill 3060. First, this bill would require manufacturers to set up collection sites to accept their products for recycling. These products, whether they are disposed of in a landfill or recycled, are solid waste and should be regulated as such. It is ORA's position that these collection sites should be required to obtain a solid waste permit pursuant to Oregon law. Currently, the bill does not require these collection sites to obtain solid waste permits, but only requires that each product stewardship plan implement environmentally sound management practices for collection. Having environmentally sound management practices is a good start, but it is not the same as having a solid waste permit and does not provide the same protections to human health and the environment as the practices required by a solid waste permit. These products are different in nature than other source-separated recyclables. If they are not handled correctly, they can become hazardous waste, and issuing permits will allow DEQ to monitor these operations in a more consistent, effective way. Requiring a permit is appropriate under existing law. ORS 459215 states that sites should not be required to obtain a solid waste permit only if, because of the nature or volume of solid waste handled, those sites are not likely to create a public nuisance, health hazard, air or water pollution, or other serious problem. Products such as rechargeable batteries and mercury-containing lights, if not handled properly, could pose a threat to human health and the environment in a number of ways, and therefore a solid waste permit should be required. It is important to remember that the nature of these products and what is contained therein does not change just because they are diverted from a landfill to be accepted at a collection site for recycling. Taking these products out of a permitted landfill to be placed at a non-permitted facility for recycling contradicts the environmental concerns that are the very basis for the existence of this bill. Secondly, it is ORA's understanding that one of the primary purposes for House Bill 3060 is to design a system to effectively deal with difficult-to-manage products. This term is undefined and could mean many different things. If it includes bulky or heavy items, then ORA members are in the business of dealing with difficult-to-manage products, and many, if not all, Aura members offer curbside service for bulky or heavy items. Instead of using the term when considering products for this term when considering products for product stewardship program, Aura encourages the committee to focus on the toxicity of the products to determine whether those products would be more effectively dealt with outside of the curbside recycling stream.
And Holly, if you would finish up, please.
Sure. Thanks. Many manufacturers have taken steps to reduce their impacts on the environment while decreasing their costs, moving to lighter weights of paper and plastic in their finished products, and studying and making packaging changes as well. If House Bill 3060 can find a way to recognize the work that is already being done and build upon it, then we will encourage sustainable practices that will benefit all. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Powell, and along with Elise Brown, represent AT&T in Oregon. AT&T certainly supports recycling, and I think our record indicates that not only AT&T, but other companies that sell and market cell phones with rechargeable batteries. Our opposition to House Bill 3060 really comes down to a resource allocation issue. We have a very, what we think is an effective recycling program. We have all the major carriers in Oregon accept each other's products to be recycled. And in that vein, in some regards, we've already started a program envisioned by House Bill 3060. Our problem with resource allocation is we would rather spend our funds with the program the way we have it designed as opposed to reinventing and paying fees that would redirect our resources. All of the major programs use the recycling program that we currently have to the benefit of Oregon citizens. AT&T uses the proceeds they get from a recycling to purchase calling cards for soldiers abroad to call home. Sprint invests in internet safety programs for kids. T-Mobile provides financial support for programs that, for youth at risk with their resources. And Verizon provides refurbished cell phones to victims of domestic violence. And we would rather, again, direct our resources to our current recycling program and these charitable purposes. So we urge the committee to hold off on this legislation at this time. Again, we were more than eager to work with the DEQ and other stakeholders in perhaps talking about methods of, in our case, doing a better job of communicating with the citizens of the state about our program and educating them on recyclability of cell phones. You've already heard that these products are becoming more and more recycling friendly, made out of products that are more easily recycled, and the batteries are now containing, and these phones are containing less of the toxic materials that they once did.
Thank you very much. Mr. Powell, I just want to clarify, would cell phones be subject to a requirement under this bill as it's written?
Mr. Chairman, I believe they would because they do contain a rechargeable battery.
Okay. Any questions? Yes, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was going to ask this of the AEA representative, but I could ask Mr. Powell. I know you're representing one company, but still, I just want to ask you. You know, we use the term in this bill, stewardship. Product stewardship, when this may be semantics, for me, much of stewardship is a volunteer connotation that may or not be technically true, but that's my context. Can you say a little bit more about your company's volunteer commitment, or can you project when the economy improves? You talked about limited resources. When you have more resources, do you have a feel for what AT&T would do in the future on its own in the recycling area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gilliam, I believe, and in fact, I talked to a representative, it was either last night or the night before, they're kind of the same to me right now. But In talking to them, one of the things that they're interested in doing is working with government agencies to promote the current recycling plan, which works well in that each carrier will accept the products of any other carrier, and not just the cell phones, but any device that goes along with them for recycling, so that the wire in headsets and that sort of thing can be recycled as well. And I think they would indeed put some money into a program, an outreach program for recycling.
Any other questions? Thanks very much. I think our last panel will include Michael Mason, Bob Olson, and Brock Howell. So if the three of you could make your way and take you in the order you arrive. Mr. Mason, I think you're up.
Thank you, Chair Cannon, members of the House Environment and Water Committee. For the record, my name is Michael Mason. I'm here as a representative of the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon. Since 2002, the tribes have testified on quite a few bills related to toxic materials, toxic substances. The focus that the tribes, the new focus the tribes have had since 2002 came from studies, extensive studies conducted by the Columbia River Tribes and the EPA in the 1990s that demonstrate alarming levels and numbers of toxic substances in the fish that make up the primary aspect of their diet. They're very alarmed for their children. The amount of fish that they consume is well over 10 times the national average. There's been a lot of debate with DEQ and a lot of work with DEQ to bring up that state average, and some of you have heard of that, about that, I'm sure. So the focus for 3060, which the tribes support the concept of, we're not concerned about, you know, we recognize there's probably a need to do some amendments. But the focus is more on some of the serious neurotoxins like methylmercury. The product stewardship concept for the compact fluorescent bulbs, that's a mouthful, is important to the tribes. And there are other issues, but that's really the primary issue for them. Is this concern about methylmercury. Yes, there are other toxins. I'd be happy to address that if the committee wishes to or individually, and we can provide summaries of the studies as well. But I should mention one other study, and that's one by Oregon State University that was done fairly recently, which showed amazingly high levels of mercury in fish throughout Oregon, in every stream in Oregon. So there's a number of reasons for that, but we appreciate, or the tribes appreciate, what the committee's doing to look at this problem, what the Legislative Assembly has done over the years to try to address the problem of methylmercury in the environment and other toxins. And I thank you for the opportunity, and I'd be happy to answer questions when the panel's done, if you'd like.
Just before we go on, Mr. Mason, methylmercury, is that contained in fluorescent, compact fluorescent labels, is it?
No, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. Mercury is contained in the light bulbs. Vaporous mercury, and vaporous mercury in and of itself is not much of a threat. It's when the mercury gets into the waterways, into the streams, into the soil, and bacteria work on the mercury and convert it to methylmercury. Then that is absorbable into the tissues of fish, and thus into the tissues of humans. And that's the terrifying thing for the Warm Springs, is what happens to their children who are ingesting methylmercury, with the effects on development and on particularly the neurological impacts.
And are light bulbs a potential source of the process that you're describing?
That's correct, Chairman.
Okay, and if you have any, I think we heard testimony on Tuesday related to the levels of mercury in compact fluorescent bulbs or fluorescent lighting generally, and the claim was that there's very little there, so not enough. I don't want to speak for the person, I don't have their testimony in front of me, but basically that it's not a significant risk. If you could provide the committee with any evidence to the contrary, that would be very helpful. Let's move on.
Happy
Mr. Olson.
To do that.
Yeah, Bob Olson with the Oregon Chiropractic Association. Our association gives a high priority to public health. We support the goal of reducing environmental and health impacts of products. This is especially important regarding mercury products. And we really appreciate your work on this important system and issue, and look forward to working with you on House Bill 3060.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Howell.
Thank you, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. My name is Brock Howell, and I am an advocate for Environment Oregon, which has 30,000 members statewide to help protect our clean air, clean water, and open space. And we support HB 3060. We view that this is a reasonable approach towards how we manage our system, and that we need to have a comprehensive, streamlined approach to make sure that as these products come online, that we have a way of being able to manage them. And so we believe this is a good approach to take. And I would like to reserve my comments for the particulars of the bill and the future bills we may be considering until those come up and for more consideration of that.
Okay. Let's, Jeff Bissonnette, you came in the room. If you come up for a brief comment, and then we'll take questions. You don't all three have to go. If one of you just takes a seat back there, there may be questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Olson's running away. He doesn't want any. Go ahead, Jeff.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, representing residential ratepayers. Thank you, and I apologize for being late. Another meeting I had ran over. Just here to testify in support of House Bill 3060, in particular, as it affects compact fluorescent light bulbs. Over the course of the last several years, as the need to help consumers reduce energy usage in their homes, compact fluorescent light bulbs have been a key tool and sort of an easy thing that most consumers want to do. At the same time, they do contain mercury, and we need to, take that into consideration. What we don't want to do is say stop using CFLs, because that would have a tremendously bad effect on energy usage. But what we have to do is help consumers both reduce their energy usage with bulbs that actually last much longer than regular incandescent light bulbs, but then help them deal responsibly with the light bulbs when they're done, and so that they just don't have to throw them in the trash and they end up in a landfill, potentially with hazardous consequences from the very small amounts of mercury contained within the light bulb. So I just wanted to come and testify, applaud the committee's efforts to move forward on this issue, and again, help the committee do the right thing and use compact fluorescent light bulbs, or CFLs, and also help them deal with them responsibly when the light bulbs burn out. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for these gentlemen?
Yeah.
Representative Smith.
We've had testimony from smart people from reputable organizations saying this is, a real challenge. Any information you have, suggestions for making, ameliorating challenges, and maybe at some point we just have to make a hard choice, would be helpful. Don't need to have all those now, but at some point, we'd love to hear how we make sure we're doing this smart.
Great. And my comment, I am interested in moving forward in this kind of approach. I'll be talking to members of the committee as well as some of the folks who testified on how we might be able to do that. There are also other bills this session that deal with some of the products mentioned herein and take a product stewardship approach to particular products and some that are not in this bill. I was interested, and I'm sorry that I didn't formulate a question for the industry panel on the e-waste analogy. It seems this bill, the primary sort of underlying purpose of this bill is to create the kind of forum that was used sort of unofficially in the e-waste process to come up with a bill that worked for industry and other stakeholders. And this bill at least appears to try to create that kind of venue for the development of programs related to the recycling of additional products. So I was sort of struck by the fact that we had folks saying, well, this won't work, even though e-waste did, and I'd be interested in hearing more about why that is, given that this process would require coming back to the legislature and seems only to ensure that there is ample stakeholder participation from all sides. So in my follow-up conversations with folks, I'll be interested in exploring that. I appreciate the time and attention that members of the public and others have given the issue, and I think we'll be revisiting it again this session. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3060. We will move quickly. I think there's only one person signed up to testify on House Bill 3063. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3063 and invite Mr. Kagan. We have one other. I don't know if he's here today. It looks like Roland.
Probably, no, he's not
here. He's not here, so it's just you. Come on up, sir, and tell us about this bill.
Chairman Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jimmy Kagan. I'm the director of the Oregon Natural Heritage Information Center, part of the Institute for Natural Resources at OSU. And our office manages the Oregon Natural Heritage Program for the Department of State Lands. This is a little bill, 3063, that was designed to make some technical changes to the Heritage Act, two particular technical changes, and my testimony pretty much outlines details of that, so I'll just briefly go through what they are. The first change adds a few words to the Sustainability Act, which is the act that created the Institute for Natural Resources, to allow INR to become a truly multi-institutional program. Right now, the language says that INR will be managed by OSU, and the new language just basically says INR will be managed by OSU or other university system institutions. The reason why we were doing this is so that the Natural Heritage Information Center, the office I manage out of Portland, can become part of Portland State University. It's a change that both universities are interested in making happen. It will, INR is actually part of the Oregon University system, and it would allow us to both operate at OSU and PSU and to better allow collaboration between the two universities. The second change is a result of a 25-year review of the program. The Heritage Program got created in 1979 by the Heritage Act, and we did a review, the Heritage Advisory Council did a review and 2 years ago, and part of the review made it pretty clear that many people didn't understand what natural heritage meant and that the program wasn't exactly in tune with what it should have been doing. And one of the recommendations out of that was that it should be renamed the Natural Areas Program, since that's really what it's focused on doing. And that the Heritage Plan, which you are now getting copies of, be renamed the Natural Areas Plan and be focused entirely on creating a voluntary network of state natural areas for the state. So that's about it.
Great. Let's see if there are questions. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 10, line 29, there's a reference to conservation tax incentives. What is that?
In the original legislation, private landowners who choose to designate areas as a natural area can apply for and get exemptions for property taxes.
It doesn't appear to have been in that paragraph before where the reference to the conservation tax incentive were.
It came from another piece of the language, Representative Benz. It was in, that's not a change in anything but the name.
Thank you.
Representative Cannon and Representative Benz, over the years, there has not been any use of that particular tax incentive.
Mr. Kagan, are you aware of any opposition to this bill?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I had not heard of any either. Seeing no further questions, I think we're prepared to move on. It's not posted for work session today. Unfortunately, we didn't get it on the agenda. We will plan on moving that bill in short order, and I would ask committee members to take a look if you find anything that maybe troublesome for you, please let me know. We can try to get your questions answered and make sure that we're moving forward together on this. Thanks very much for being here, Jimmy.
Okay.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 3063. And let's continue down the agenda with to open a public hearing on HJR 40. I will say a few words about this bill since I had it drafted. This is a resolution that recognizes and honors Dr. Jane Lipchenko for contributions to marine biology and understanding of climate change. And for her service to Oregon, she was recently appointed to head NOAA and was confirmed by the U.S. Senate. I had this resolution drafted, the first I've ever had drafted, back in December after seeing the publicity surrounding her appointment and thinking something of it, and then later reading an article in The Economist magazine, which I also read, Mr. Revenue Chair, and seeing her name prominently there, and thought, well, this is a pretty neat thing that an Oregon scientist and scholar has been appointed to head this significant federal agency. We have one person signed up to testify, Mr. Mark Abbott, if you would join us.
Thank you, Chairman Cannon and members of the House Environment and Water Committee. For the record, my name is Mark Abbott. I'm the Dean of the College of Oceanic and Atmospheric Sciences at Oregon State University, and I'm here to speak in support of House Joint Resolution 40, recognizing Dr. Jane Lipchenko. Dr. Lipchenko has spent over 30 years at Oregon State University, and she's one of our most productive and celebrated faculty members in our 140-year history. She is one of only five faculty to be named to the National Academy of Sciences and has been honored with a whole range of national and international awards, ranging from a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant to several honorary degrees from many prestigious universities. Her work in understanding ocean ecosystems and their interaction with climate change are landmarks in their field, but her work is not just confined to the academic enterprise. She plays an important personal and community role in bringing that science to the public, not only in terms of education, but helping to inform policy and move policy forward. Her work with young scientists through the Aldo Leopold Leadership Program and encouraging them to communicate with science and to listen to the needs of the public are real models for how to engage science in complex environmental issues. Her recent nomination and confirmation by the U.S. Senate as Undersecretary of Commerce and Administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration by President Obama demonstrates again the commitment to bring science to policy. In her new role, Dr. Lipchenko will have the opportunity to model Oregon values, our regard for the environment, our respect for knowledge and science, and bringing that science to our policies and our history of thoughtful, creative engagement in these complex issues. Her work in this very high-profile position of science leadership at NOAA, we're certain she will continue to do what she has always done for over 30 years at OSU, continue to make us proud and to make Oregon proud as well. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. Are there any questions? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Indulge a comment, and thank you, Mr. Abbott, for coming in and testifying. Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge a little bit of a story, I bring a little bit of background on this particular issue, having studied much of Dr. Lipchenko's work during my undergraduate thesis process and becoming very familiar with the quality and the caliber of her work. And then immediately after graduating, I left and worked for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the National Ocean Service, and had at that time remarked how much that agency could benefit from her leadership, the scientific rigor that she brings, and the perspective that she brings as a scientist from Oregon. And when it was announced that she had been appointed as the director of NOAA, I joined with many of our fellow Oregonians in expressing joy at the fact that NOAA will have that kind of leadership. And I'm very glad that you've brought this resolution forward.
Oh, thanks for that comment. Well, seeing no further questions for Mr. Abbott, I think I'm prepared to close this public hearing and take it to work session. So stick around, Mark. We'll close the public hearing on HJR 40 and open a work session on HJR 40, and I would accept a motion. Oh, I'm sorry. I should bring to your attention, thank you, Beth, the -1 amendments. We definitely need to move these. We had the bill drafted before she was confirmed by the U.S. Senate in order to meet our deadline for drafting, which subsequently she was confirmed. We had the amendments drafted that refer to that. They are a complete replacement of the well, all but the sort of final three lines, four lines of the original bill.
Name.
So the whole prologue, all the whereas clauses. And, yeah, I'll take a motion on the dash ones.
I move the dash ones, Mr. Chair, to House Joint Resolution 40.
Representative Smith moves the dash one amendments to House Joint Resolution 40. Any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? So moved. And I accept the motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Resolution 40 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Smith moves House Joint Resolution 40 to the floor as amended. Any discussion? I would only comment that I ordinarily think that these resolutions have little import. In this case, I've decided perhaps this does matter because through my service on the Ways and Means Subcommittee for Natural Resources, we've been approving grant applications from state agencies to NOAA to the tune of $80-100 million of federal stimulus dollars. And I'm thinking, perhaps, if Dr. Lubchenco is paying attention to our work today in her honor, we'll receive more favorable treatment for these grant applications. That's my hope.
The cagey move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
I had this thought before, but now it seems even more important. Isn't there more we can do on some of these resolutions? It does occur to me that this is a tradition. I think it's a valuable tradition. I sometimes wonder, even as laudable as they and many as many are, if we are doing this so that it makes us feel like we're doing work, okay, even though it isn't always doing work. And one way it would do real work is if more people knew that it was happening. Right, so I'm sort of the, and I haven't said this to anybody else, and wanted to say it to my friends in this committee, just because I want us to be thinking about this, that the precious minutes we spend on very valuable resolutions are minutes we are spending instead of doing other things. And I only want to say this with regard to the kind of ones that I'm really supportive of, like this one. So I either think we want to be careful of them, or we want to do even more, and maybe like having a scrolling piece of a website that says, here's the resolutions that we did, right? So we have a state website, and it says, hey, here's, you know, so there's actually some juice. It's not just a feel-good letter that goes to the family, but it's something that actually helps manifest the values of who we are as a state, if that is, in fact, the purpose.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I think that's actually...
I'm going to vote aye on this, of course.
Thank you. I think that's an excellent comment. I've had many of the same thoughts myself. Why do we do this? What's their significance? Is there any? Do we dilute the importance of these by doing so many? Or should we, in fact, do more and make a deal out of them? I think that's certainly worthy for further conversation. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, will you please call the roll, Sue?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Excused.
Representative
Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Gillen?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. I will carry this to the floor. Thank you very much. We'll close the work session on HJR 40 and open a work session, open a public hearing on HJR 16. Making good time, committee. And this is the second resolution today, and we are waiting for the sign-up sheet. The remaining three bills on today's calendar all relate to ocean issues. That was the original purpose. Representative Cowan, are you testifying on 16? Come on up. Welcome.
Thank you. Like everyone else, I'm shuttling between committees, yes. So I appreciate your accommodation here. The material that I...
You want to introduce yourself.
Yes, I do. Thank you. But I need to be reminded, apparently.
It happens to me all the time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Jean Cowan. I represent House District 10, which is the Central Oregon coast, and... amazingly enough, includes Newport, which has something to do with House Joint Resolution 16. And what we're sharing with you at the moment is a letter from the local Yaquina Bay Economic Foundation, which is much easier to say as YBEEF, and that's how we refer to it. They They talk a little bit about themselves here as a group that promotes economic growth in the area, and they're really rather modest. This is a very significant group in our area who have been sort of the driving force behind a number of different things, and they are strongly in support of this resolution that I bring to you, needing some help from the state to help the federal government understand that as our existing research vessel, the Wacoma, is reaching the end of its natural life and is going to need to be retired, we are hopeful that we will acquire a replacement research vessel because that's a very significant piece of the economy in our community. It's just this big white boat that sits there and nobody thinks too much about it a lot of times, except that it attracts the fact that we have a vessel for researchers attracts researchers from everywhere, and it's sort of a taxi. It comes with a highly skilled crew and is able to take people out to do all of their various projects. So really the kinds of things that are generated are hard to put a finger on, but very massive and tie very nicely with the educational and research component that's very important to our community with the Hatfield Marine Science Center and all of the other folks there. The situation is that the state of Oregon has never put any financial support into these ventures, and as others make their decisions on who gets what, they look at that. So this resolution recognizes the importance of this particular effort and commits the state to some sort of support but not in the current biennium, and that's very important. We are not actually asking for any money right now, but ask for the state's general support of this concept and a commitment in a future biennia to put some resource behind it. Mm-hmm. Now, do I honestly know that we can't commit a future legislature to a specific number of dollars? Yes, I do. But I do think that it's important that the state recognizes that these things are critically important to some of our economics, that we may not really recognize fully just exactly what they do, but without them they would leave a huge hole in our community and all up and down the coast. So I would very much appreciate your support of moving forward this sort of a collective recognition of the importance of the research industry to the state of Oregan.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank
Cameron.
You.
Is there questions, Representative Gilliam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not really a question, but in the context of what we just talked about with Representative Smith, I would say this is particularly an important resolution, I think, because I want, as you know, Newport to move forward, not backward, in the area of marine science and related fields. So anything we can do to underline that, because the resources there, as you know, are first class. And if we can bring this to the attention of the right folks in Washington as this ship goes out of commission, I think it's the right thing to do. It's the little things, perhaps, but all together, I think we really need to focus on Newport and the strengths we have there. And lastly, I would say it makes a whole lot of sense to me, not just because you're from Newport, Representative, but because of your passion for our seniors, for you once again to come to the rescue of a senior member of the Oregon community. I appreciate it very much.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilliam, I like all old things, apparently, including old boats. I believe my boat was built in 1977 or something like that, and we're still keeping it afloat as well. But I do appreciate your recognition of the kind of work that's going on there. We will have more to talk about in terms of very exciting prospects for the future of research and some of the other sorts of fleets that we would like to attract to the area. But for now, we will focus on this particular vessel replacement. And one thing that I didn't mention is I would draw you to the signatories on the back of this letter. And it sort of explains the breadth of the individuals on the board of directors who are interested in this. David Bigelow, who simply signed himself as the president of YBEEF, is also the CEO of our local hospital, and it runs the gamut through the Economic Development Alliance, the community college, the school system, all across the board. So I probably should have noted that. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Yeah, Representative Betts, I think there may be a couple more questions. Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am just curious, having not seen this looking ahead type of resolution before, the phrase resolve to support then is just euphemism for we hope, we wish, we will, we may. What's it really saying? I'm just wondering.
Representative Cannon, or Chair Cannon, Representative Betts, I think it's creative. Don't you?
That's what I'm asking.
I think it means we will unless we won't.
It does indicate our intention to be supportive of this effort, yes. And frankly, I don't know a dollar figure at this particular time, so I couldn't offer you one at this particular moment. But it's obviously a conversation that we'll have to have once we see what's in front of us.
Representative Barnhart.
May I respond briefly to that? I think what this is a message to a future legislature, which they can do with whatever they decide to do.
Representative Smith.
Yeah, it has a message saying, we would have done this now if we had the money, but we don't, so you better when you get the money. And I think that's, and if they don't, then we can, and which hopefully will be some people that we know, that will remind us that we really want to do this is an important priority, and it's more than, and it's a step forward, right? So they can come, hey, as the chamber voted in the 2009 session, and what, you know, I think, you know, it would be persuasive to me if that had happened last session and they brought this forward and now there was time to take the next step, as we've seen on up-free charge, et cetera. So I think it has value.
Yeah. Chair Cannon, Representative Smith, a point of clarification, too. It's not just a matter of we don't have the money at this point. It's not time. We're still in the process of doing an application, but that is a challenging and competitive process, and we need to indicate that our state is behind this kind of economic development in our communities, but it isn't timely at this point to put actual funding into it.
Thank you, Representative Cameron. And I'm happy to move this forward. I probably would feel somewhat even more comfortable with it if it didn't have the specific dollar figure, because that's where you start to sort of go, well, but we don't really know why that dollar figure. As you said, we're not sure what it will cost. But I think we've put on the record what we mean when we resolve to support funding for this important project. So thank you very much for bringing it forward.
Thank you.
I expect we'll be able to move along with it today.
I appreciate your consideration of that. It was an interesting situation to be in. We know that we don't need it right at this moment, but we do know that we need to put a commitment into it. So this was the language we came up with to accomplish that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Dean Abbott, we have you signed up here today as well on this resolution.
I'll get out of your way.
Oh, and Terry Thompson, you're also on our list.
Chairman Cannon, members of the House Environment and Waters Committee, for the record, my name is Mark Abbott, Dean of the College of Oceanic and Atmospheric Sciences at Oregon State University, here to speak on behalf of House Joint Resolution 16 regarding the research vessel Wacoma. I first want to thank Representative Cowan and other members of the Coastal Caucus for bringing this resolution forward. We really appreciate their support. I've also included a letter from the governor supporting the resolution as well for your information. And I just wanted to point out, and I think Representative Cowan did a wonderful job of explaining that, you know, the ocean is important for us for a whole range of reasons, and including new reasons coming in the future, for example, new sources of renewable energy. And access to the sea through a research vessel like the Wacoma has been an important part of our Oregon heritage for the last 30 years. The ship is approaching the end of its life, and the U.S. Navy has announced that later this spring they will be issuing a request for proposals for the operator of its replacement. The replacement would come online in 2014, roughly, which is one of the reasons why we don't need the money today. But in that proposal that will be due later this summer, they will require demonstration of state support for the ship. Oregon is the only state that operates a federally owned research vessel that has never provided any funds towards the operation of that ship. I should point out that the number of 500,000 is what we anticipate based on the fact that the federal government will be paying the bulk of the operating costs of roughly $5 million a year. And 10% is roughly that amount that the federal government will expect to see as a demonstrated state commitment to continue the operation of that ship. The ship itself will cost roughly $100 million, and the state and the federal government will be paying for that cost. There will be one on the West Coast and one on the East Coast, and our competitor on the West Coast will be the University of California, San Diego, through the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in La Jolla. As Representative Cowan pointed out, this ship and those operating costs largely go to pay salaries. They pay for technicians and equipment. Most of the roughly $5 million in the operating costs for the new ship will remain in Oregon through high-paying jobs. And so we feel that this is a small investment for an enormous return, as well as continuing to maintain Oregon as a hub of ocean and coastal ocean research. And so this resolution will actually be incredibly important because it will be included in the proposal to the U.S. Navy along with the letter from the governor to demonstrate Oregon's future commitment to the ship and will continue to make us competitive. If it wasn't there, we would not meet the terms of the proposal of the request, so we wouldn't be able to do that. So, again, I respectfully request your support for House Joint Resolution 16, which will enable Oregon State University to be competitive for the replacement to the RV Wacoma, and thank you for your consideration and attention.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Terry Thompson. I'm Lincoln County Commissioner, but I'm also a lifelong commercial fisherman. I've been around since the very first research vessel ever came to Newport. And there's a lot of side benefits to having a research vessel of this class in a port like ours. Today, I think we have one of the best scientific-minded commercial fishing fleets in the world. And one of the reasons for that success is because the relationship of having a research vessel and Oregon State University's whole area of marine involvement. And if we lose that vessel, I think it would be a tremendous loss for the future growth not only of Newport, Lincoln County, but the state of Oregon. We're doing all kinds of different types of new marine research, and a lot of that vessel's time is spent not just doing fisheries research. In fact, it's a small portion of what it does. It travels around the world. It works on the offshore vents. That's a big one. That research vessels had a key part in that of understanding about how the Earth is formed and the potential for Oregon to have a major disaster on this coast. Now, without that information, we wouldn't be prepared for what may happen or should probably will happen in the future. I'm just saying we don't know what all a new research vessel is going to happen. We do know, though, this vessel is about to become obsolete, and to let it go without an effort to try to make sure we have another in place would be a huge loss to the state of Oregon.
Well, thank you for your testimony and for being here. Mr. Abbott, maybe you know, is it true that this vessel has a fault named after it? And is that a good thing?
No fault of my own. Yes, I assume that there is.
So it says here. Yes. It discovered the Wacoma fault.
Yep.
What a coincidence. All right. Sorry. Any other questions? Representative Killian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for being here. I guess I would be willing to move this. I understand your hesitancy and your want to change. I'm for either way. But I guess a thing I'm thrilled about, Mr. Chair, is that we have just heard two consecutive bills without a single reference to the DEQ. And I'm
we can probably get him in here. Bailey, you want to respond? No, thank you very much. Thank you both very much for being here.
And it's on fire.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on HJR 16. I think I'm still on the right number. And open a work session on HJR 16. I am happy to move this forward and would accept the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the DEQ amendments to HGR 16.
That's
not. Mr. Chair, I withdraw that motion. Mr. Chair, I move HGR 16 to the. Wait, isn't it Senate Judgment Resolution?
No, I think it's
HGR. Mr. Chair, I move HGR 16 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
That's right.
Very good. Representative Smith moves HGR 16 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Benz.
Mr. Chair, again, just to go back to the resolve to support portion. I think I heard the testimony that the device will be used so that the federal government will rely upon our commitment when, in fact, we're not making the commitment. Now, I'm in favor of this. It's just that I want the record to be clear that, as Representative Barnhart pointed out, we're doing the best we can without making a commitment.
Yeah. Mark, do you want to come up and speak to it? Because I think that's a reference to a comment that you made. You know, sort of clarify.
Yeah.
Will this be understood as a, they're going to get $500,000 a year out of Oregon starting in 2014?
Everybody will understand that budgets change and that it's best intent. And they will recognize that it's everybody's best intent to go forward with this. And
sorry, will you identify yourself again?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. My name is Mark Abbott, Dean of the College of Oceanic and Atmospheric Sciences, Oregon State University. Yeah, so Chairman Cannon, Representative Benz, that's a wonderful question. But the understanding in all of these kinds of proposals is that it's always best effort and that things change. I mean, we don't know, and we won't need the money until 4 years. And that's, if there are extenuating circumstances, we'll do our best in other ways to come up with those funds.
Best effort. Representative Benz.
A follow-up?
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The resolution states $500,000 per annum beginning in 2014. Does that go on and then indefinitely, or is that a one-year commitment?
Representative Cannon, Representative Benz, yes, that would be a continuing commitment. I should point out California, Rhode Island, Washington, Hawaii, all the other states that operate research vessels for the U.S. government contribute $500,000 or more. State of Washington has put in $1.5 million every year. And what they do is they use that money to support a whole range of activities. Every state has done different strategies. Some use it to support student cruises. Some use it to support state agencies doing their own research. And it would be up to the state of Oregon. That would be our ship time for the state to use as it sees fit. But it would be a continuing expectation.
Representative Bernhardt, did you want to follow up?
Actually, just a comment.
Sure.
Thank you for that. Wonder if the group of us, if any of us are back here in 2 years, and whether any one of us would feel obligated to vote for an unending commitment of $500,000 per year. And more to the point, would we have to, having voted for this now? I guess as long as we're all clear that today this is what we're in favor of this, and we want this to be used as a reflection of what we hope will happen, then that's fine with me. But I hate to be trying to say that we're going to commit when, in fact, we can't.
Right.
I think those are really important comments to have on the record to clarify what we mean to be doing here, and I appreciate mm-hmm. your sort of conscientiousness with respect to this, because certainly I don't think we're in any position to be committing a future legislature, certainly not legally, but even sort of in principle. We may not be here, this group, and may have very different values and very different needs. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Did I understand you to say that Oregon doesn't commit any funds now?
Chairman Cannon, Representative Barnhart, that is true. The funding for the Wacoma today is entirely paid for out of the federal government.
You know, I see over and over again, Mr. Chair, examples of how Oregon has managed to run programs, maintain operations, educate students, and a whole host of other things for less money than anyone else spends.
We're
one
good.
More example.
Yeah, and I should point out that number is about the 10-year average has been $3.5 million a year into the state of Oregon from the National Science Foundation to operate the Wacoma.
Right.
And that's not including the science that goes along with it.
No wonder we see a grin.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Any further
one
discussion?
One last comment,
yeah,
Mr. Chair. I just want to go on record saying that if we have a future legislature. I'm not sure that we will. I hope that at least three of us here will be there.
We won't ask you which three. Any further discussion?
Appreciate that comment.
Will the clerk please call the roll on the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Cowan, will you carry this to the floor?
I would be delighted. Thank you.
Very good. And we'll close the work session on HJR 16 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3106. Representative Roblin. And anyone else you want to bring up, or we'll have them up next. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chair. For the record, Arne Roblin, House District 9. And Representative Boone had a meeting that she had to go to, and she wanted to give her regrets to the group for not being here for this bill. It's another bill that we have vetted in the Coastal Caucus and talked about. It's also a bill that has its origins at least two sessions ago, because that's when I started having conversations with people about this. Last session we tried and did not get a bill together because of conversations with lots of people that didn't go in a direction that seemed it was going to be productive. And so today we have House Bill 3106, and I would hope people would look at the dash one amendments. I think there's also some dash twos.
Right.
Terry will talk about those as well. But I guess what I want to first do is give you a vision that this has nothing to do with DEQ. I want to make sure that Representative Gilliam understood that so that he can now talk about how many bills in a row? Three now, though, isn't it? Yeah, thank you. Just wanted to make sure that you kept record.
It's early.
But in the three sessions, this being the third, that I have been here, the constant comment about oceans is that we need to have research, but we don't have any research. We haven't funded research. We don't know this or that or other things about the ocean. And when you talk to scientists, we see that a number of people from the University of Oregon to Portland State to Oregon State all have people working in this field. But it's not... It's each individual scientist going after research that of interest to them and not putting it all together to give us, as policymakers, the information we need to make good decisions about our ocean and the coast of Oregon. And so I started thinking that we need to have this coastal institute, a marine institute that was designed around getting good information for us to make good policy decisions on, and how do you go about forming that? And so last session I took it head on and tried to do the institute. That was met by lots of different people having conversations around it, and I didn't get anywhere. So this time I come to you with the idea that what we really need to do is get some very smart people who have general ideas about what's going on in the ocean. And if you look at the list in the first portions of this bill in Section 1, it kind of gives you an outline of the kinds of people we want. And you can tell many of them have been involved in a lot of different ocean research. Our Fish and Wildlife put out this document, which is a great explanation of nearshore strategy that they're working on. You've got the people from Sea Grant who have done another, it's a draft policy on marine research and information needs, and you've got other groups doing One Coast, One Future, the regional approach. There is a lot of research that's been talking about this, but there isn't an Oregon solution, and I tend to believe that when you really look at what Oregonians do best, they come together with diverse interests, and they put into place organizations that do things that no place, that is not done as well anyplace else in the world. And my hope here is that what my vision of this is, that we're going to get a group of people together who will define what it is that we need to think about and how we go about collecting that information. And I'll give you an example of one of the things that I think needs to be discussed. I want an organization, and it could be with OPAC, it could be at one of our universities, it could be a separate nonprofit, whatever, and that's what this group will be looking at, trying to find out what kind of organization should be this research. They need to be able to get money from the state. They need to get money from other places outside, different groups that would like to know more about the ocean. But more importantly, they need to have protocols in place that describe how the money is going to be spent, how the research is going to be done, so that all constituents recognize that this is really about getting good information. And it's not about, there won't be any question about the bias with regard to this information. And here's how, one of the things that I think needs to be discussed. If you're going to put out an RFP to a group of scientists to gather information, that in that RFP you explain to them that all the information you gather will be public record, so that any other scientists can look at the information you've gathered. The protocols that you have designed in that research institution, which say how you collect the samples and how you do that stuff, will be public information to all other scientists, so they can decide, is that how they would have done their research? And then at the end, when you have done your research and you've given your explanation as a scientist as to what you think that information says, it can be truly vetted by any other scientist because they can look at the protocols, they can look at the information that was gathered, and it stays in the public domain, and it answers, gives us information to make better decisions on how we, as a state, choose to manage our nearshore resources. It looks at all the effects, the commercial effects, the ecological effects, all of it is there, and that's why when you look at the list of people we've put on here, we want to get their interest in the very beginning. I believe that research done on the coast should be done as much as possible by using the fleet we already have to go out and collect information. But to do that, the protocols and the training of those people to collect it is important. We've had great research done, and you're going to hear a little bit about that, by local fishermen collecting data and bringing it back on shore. It is one of those things where all Oregonians can take pride in the research that we find if we do this right. And it will be something that hasn't been done in other places. And that's why I think this is important. You go to the last part. We also recognize that today we are in a financial crisis. How do we find the money for this, just this part, the next 2 years, to come back with recommendations to the next legislature? And so if you look at Section 2, there's a whole lot of language here, but what it really says is, and it's on the second page, that the Department of State Lands will transfer $100,000 to do this research. That Department of State Lands money is the new CARISA money. And I believe there is a direct, and this is in the dash twos.
Dash ones.
What you see here is an explanation of taking $100,000 from the new CARISA settlement money that was left to use to fund this particular task force. I believe there is a direct nexus to New CARISA and this research. We have a ship that gets too close to the shore, a storm is happening, they aren't letting them come into the bay, they don't set their anchor correctly, all of a sudden it's on the beach, and for the next number of years we have a attraction on the Oregon coast, which finally got removed this year at an expense of about $18 or $19 million. The good news was that we actually showed people that local people in the Coos Bay area could come together with the contractor and they could solve the problems to do a ship breaking activity in the surf and not cause danger to the environment, which is pretty remarkable. First time it's ever really been done. And at the same time, they had some money left over. We did it on budget with a little extra money from the settlement. That money should be used, in my opinion, to enhance understanding of our nearshore. I also had another great place, a historical museum, which is in our area, but I understand the need for ocean research that needs to go on, including mapping of the ocean floor and some other stuff. So from my perspective, a perfect nexus, and that's why that's in this particular bill as well. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions and let the people on either side of me answer any questions that they might.
Are there any questions for Representative Roblin? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Roblin, for bringing this. Talk to us a little bit about the potential economic benefits of something like this. And I mean, let's say it gets set up and things happen going forward, just so folks who don't live on the coast and aren't engaged directly in coastal economies can understand some of the economic ripple effects and, you know, tell stories and examples of, you know, how that sort of plays out.
Right now, if you really were to take the opportunity to look at OMB and Coos Bay, Oregon Marine Biology Institute, and the money that they bring in grants and research with the scientists that are there doing the research that they're doing right now. You take the people at Newport with Oregon State and with Sea Grant and look at the kind of money that they're bringing in. You just heard about a ship that's there from NOAA. If you take Portland State and the stuff they're doing on invasive species and stuff, the intellectual community in our state is exceptionally good on understanding these things. So they already have a very large presence economically in our state. Millions and millions of dollars come into this state to do research and hire people. If you were to listen to people at Port Orford right now, they're working on trying to get a field station set up, and we're working very hard to figure out how to help them do that. I would hope that as they have this discussion in this committee, they would look at that as a set, and maybe we should have field stations up and down the coast where scientists and other people coming could come and stay there, add economic value to those communities while they gathered research and did things, work with the local community. My vision would be that local fishermen and their boats would be used by those scientists to go out, ferry back and forth and do things. All of that adds value to our local economies and makes a better, bigger and better understanding of what that interaction between us and our nearshore. I think it also opens up the idea that we're going to gather a lot of information. There's a lot of controversy. One of the issues on the ocean right now is we have wave energy looking at places to go, and we have some research that's going on, and we'll be getting some information from the OPT group that's in just off of Reedsport, and Terry could talk to you a little bit more about that. But it's being done in a sense, individual by individual. We fight over different places. We don't have a plan about how this should happen. We need to figure out. I think this is a group that can start having some of those kinds of discussions as well. And so you've got fishermen who have their traditional places. You've got wave energy that's coming. You've got all sorts of issues that are happening to our coast. And they come at us one at a time without having had people really think about that. So we don't know what the untold cost economically is on these places. This kind of institute starts helping us ask the right questions and move to maybe answering them better, working with our local counties and cities and local people, as well as the whole state, to get a better understanding. And I came to the conclusion the last time that everybody who had an economic interest wanted to have control of this. That's why the last one fell apart. And so what the issue here was, why don't we put all those people in a room and say, let's come up with the best thing that helps all of us have a little bit better understanding, as opposed to anyone thinking that they're going to get that. And that's why I even leave this group up to recommending where it should be housed, because that was an issue that I couldn't come to grips with at all. So untold economic benefits for our local fishermen if they actually get contracts to ferry things back and forth, and to actually start maybe even gathering data as they go out fishing and doing other stuff as part of their to supplement an industry that's already having a difficult time. So I don't know that I even have a clear understanding of all of the economic benefits that could exist, but there are many.
Thanks very much.
Representative Rubin, is there any conflict between the Dash 1s and Dash 2s? I guess I should ask if you've seen the Dash
2s. There are no conflicts between the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s. The question is truly up to you to decide how big a group you want and what influence. And we could have gone on and on for a list of people who could have been on this, and there were a lot of others that asked about, well, have you considered putting us on? Example, the group from Port Orford, and my feeling is that once this group gets organized and starts having meetings, they really need to have public meetings where they invite those different groups to come and give their ideas as they have a particular topic to talk about. As this is written, I see that as part of what they do. The issue here is, it had a fishing representative, and the question is, should we, at the beginning of this process, recognize that there are really two fishing interests here, one of which has to do with recreational, one of which has to do with commercial. That's a decision for you to make. It's really, truly a part of the idea of the policy, what you think the best policy should be. So they are not in conflict.
And maybe we'll get into this more later in the hearing, but it looks like in the Dash 1s you do, similar to the Dash 2s, you expand the size of this by one over what was in the original draft, and you include two members, well, one member representing seafood commodities, one member representing locally based fishermen groups. I think So that takes the place of that line that just said industry, I think, in the original draft.
Correct.
Is that right? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Oh. Yes, Representative Bailey. Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I should probably let the committee know that the person designated in Section 1, Subsection E of the original bill, and in the Dash 1, Section 1, Subsection D, is a member of my immediate family. So just to make sure that that's on the record. A couple of questions, if your indulgence, Mr. Chair. Representative Roland, I apologize. I haven't had a chance to read it very carefully before today, so I have a couple of questions just to make sure I'm understanding the intent. It sounds to me, is it correct to say that the intent here is coordinated research?
Yes. That's one of the major aspects. It is coordinated research, and I think it's also developing an organization whose purpose would be to continue that coordinated idea of research. Maybe take the past research that's been done. And also, for me, it's branding that the research this is going to be done through this group is going to be open for true scientific inquiry from anybody. That what we're really about is gathering information.
Well, and that makes sense to me. Could you help me draw the connection between the task force and coordinated research?
Yes. Currently, we have about, I don't know, a number of agencies, all of whom have a different part of this ocean. And so if I was in the state land board, I would want to know how the ocean floor is all, what's there, and what I am in control of. If I'm Fish and Wildlife, I want to know what about the creatures that are out there in particular. If I'm DEQ, I want to know about water quality. If I'm agriculture, I need to know about what are the effects on oysters and a few of the shellfish that are there represent, which are not represented in Fish and Wildlife. There is no one agency that has the purpose of looking at the whole coast and helping us decide what's the most important information we need to know in order to manage this big thing. I'm hoping that this group, with the knowledge that they possess and bring to that, can come up with an organization whose single purpose is to look at the whole and figure out where research dollars, because they will always be limited, would give us the greatest amount of information to make the best policy decisions in the future about our ocean.
Oh, Mr. Chair? So if I'm understanding correctly, then the task force is a multi-agency and stakeholder group that is making recommendations about where research entities and higher ed institutions should be focusing their research and where it might be most helpful. Is that correct?
Partially. I think that what they're really going to do is give us a recommendation back to us. When I talked about having a coastal research institute, some place where this would come together, I'm hoping that they will tell us what that should look like. Who is that entity, that institute should look like? Should it be something that is housed in organizations we already have, Fish and Wildlife, for example? Should it be housed in OPAC? Should it be housed in a separate nonprofit that we give some structure to, this group defines some structure to? But in my opinion, we would finally have a place whose sole purpose is to consider the whole, not individual parts, which is what we do with our agencies today. And help define how limited research money goes to answer questions which that new institute agrees are the most important information that we need to know at any particular time.
Final follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Oh.
I appreciate you walking me through this. So in creating the task force, are we creating a new and unique entity to oversee this, or is this duplicative of other kinds of entities?
This one goes away as soon as they give us our recommendations. And the recommendation, as I said, could be any one of a number of places where it should be housed, any one of a number of things that they should put into their bylaws about these are the kinds of things open. The one example that I talked about is how the research should be handled, you know, that all of it will be open, including the actual raw data, so that people can redo the experiment in their own if they want to and see if they can concur with it. But this entity goes away. It does not exist afterwards.
I want to move on here before we run too short on time, but Representative Smith, did you want to get a...
I wanted to ask you, thank you, Mr. Chair, I wanted to ask you about the money. And I think, at least geographically, the linkage seems interesting, and scientifically it seems interesting between New Carissa and the and your proposal. What else should we be thinking about when making that judgment, right? And are there any other, anything else competing for that money? Do we just, you know, how do we think about that? In part because if we're, because we've received the admonition from you, in fact, that to make sure that we don't, you know, that if we pass it to Ways and Means, it's because we've thought about it, we want to spend the money, and how should we think about that? And what would be, what else might we be deciding if we make this decision? Or when we make this decision?
There are at least, I can talk about three or four things. In the governor's budget originally, he took part of this money, $1 million, and sent it to seafloor mapping. He sent $1.2 million to implementation of the OPAC decision on reserves, and he left about $187,000. That would be nice.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Would have been nice. I would like to have had it. I was one of those people who didn't think we should have taken the shipwreck off and we should have kept the whole 20. But we didn't do that, so I've got to go off that one. So about $184,000 left after that. And so I looked at that money and said, we'll take $100,000 of the money that was not allocated in that budget. There are other people, some advocates, who would say this is already given to the land board. They have this statutorial agreement, I mean the constitutional agreement, that their money goes to the state school fund. I see this as totally different. It was, and that's why the wording is here. It is not constitutional money. It is separate money that came from a lawsuit with this particular thing that happened on this particular part of the ocean. And so, from my perspective, it isn't in that. And I care very deeply about education, so that's not the issue to me. It's that that this is really about knowing more about our ocean so that, A, we don't have more New Carissas on our beaches. They also went up and visited Newport on the New Carissa, but they were able to take that one off and eventually get rid of it. So it's... those are the only ones that I've heard to this point, but those are areas that have been discussed at different times.
Thanks. That's very helpful. I had a similar question. Let's hear from your associates here.
Representative Cannon, Chair, and the rest of the committee. My name is Gil Sylvia, and I'm superintendent of the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station. Now, this is an interdisciplinary research group that's located in Newport and Astoria, the Astoria Seafood Lab and the Hatfield Marine Science Center. And we're part of the Oregon State University system of the Agricultural Experiment Station. We are the only branch agricultural experiment station in the United States that's dedicated solely to marine issues, and we were, with your support, was established in 1988 to focus on two issues. One was to improve the utilization and benefits from research in marine resources in Oregon and the West Coast, and also improve our conservation and protection. That's our mandate. Now, I'm here to speak on behalf of this bill as both a research scientist and a leader of a research organization. And I have 20 years of experience here in the state of Oregon working on marine research issues. In 2006, my board, and my board is representative of marine resource industries and communities and local government, charged us with a task. And its task was to look at ways to improve the coordination of nearshore research. And the reason this was coming up front was two reasons. One, recognizing the increasing competitive demands on our nearshore research for new uses. And you heard Representative Roland talk about some of those: wave energy, marine reserves, commercial recreational fishing, but increasing tourist demands. And this was increasing the challenge for how are we going to do the science and management to support all these increasing uses. Second, it was recognizing that that we needed to leverage new non-state investment. This state
has an opportunity to take its own dollars and leverage those if we have a strategic plan. And finally, it was to do to maximize the value that we were getting from our nearshore resources while protecting our coastal habitats and ecosystems. So we developed a draft plan. The very time we were delivering that plan, we saw that House Bill 3440 in the 2007 legislature was being introduced that had many of the same ideas embedded in it. And these were parallel efforts. We had not had any conversations. And even though the bill didn't pass, that Representative Roblin talked about, what it did was catalyze a whole series of conversations on the coast about the need to coordinate research. Look, this is a relatively, in my view, this is a relatively small state, but we have a lot of resources in the state to do marine research, and we have our, and I have to respond to the comments I've heard here, but I will tell you, relative to California and Washington, our comparative advantage is that is our very smallness and the fact that we can do collaborative work. That's where our strength and power comes from in terms of the kind of quality work we can do, involving our industries, our coastal communities, all our agencies, and our major state universities. We can bring them to the table and create more effective marine research to support policy management and leverage, I believe, attract significantly greater outside funding to support that research. Now, and just 2 points about economics, and I'm a marine resource economist. That's my background. The coast and the marine resources generate about $1 billion to the state annually, and they support about 40,000 jobs. Okay, that's our best estimate. So it's a significant part of the state. Second is we are facing huge, I would say, significant challenges in the 21st century we did not face a decade ago. I mentioned one, which is this increasing resource competition. Two is economic stress to our coastal ports and communities, particularly working waterfronts. And this is in the governor's plan for the three states. It's a significant issue and challenge, how to retain those working waterfronts in the face of increasing demand for those properties for alternative purposes. Increasing regulatory costs that are coming out from our fishery laws and environmental laws. The requirement to do ecosystem-based management and science. I don't know if we know how to do that or even what it means. And I think this task force, this could be one thing that they can undertake. How would Oregon undertake ecosystem-based management and science that could work effectively for them rather than being a mandate or a difficult regulatory requirement that that generates higher costs rather than higher benefits? I do believe that we don't coordinate as well as we should in a state this small. And finally, I don't think we've adequately invested given the value of these resources for the state. So I think this bill supports a comprehensive approach that needs to be taken for given a state of our size. It also needs to recognize that many state agencies, ODF&W, Sea Grant, OPAC, the West Coast governors, are all interested and involved in research, in marine research. The question is how best to bring these all these groups together and generate what I would call a strategic investment plan that leverages state dollars with outside dollars into a comprehensive, organized effort and involves with the kind of principles we've heard about, collaborative research, innovation, new technologies, but do it as a collaborative partnership among the core groups of this state.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Commissioner Thompson, and I'm going to ask, since we're drawing short on time, some of your constituents are here to testify as
and,
well.
And so. I'll make this real quick. This is a good bill. It's got one additional thing. One little short story about the other day I was at Nearshore Action Team in Depot Bay. There was a research project came in on plants. We think we know a lot about the ocean. There was 65 plants identified, 12 of them had never been identified before. That's how little we know about our nearshore ocean. We need a priority list of what type of research to do first. I would make that a pretty important list. And so that's what I see this group doing. To me, you know, there's only two little tweaks that I might consider, in fact, only one, really, and that's it is so hard for anybody to represent the commercial and the sports industry. No matter who it is, they're going to be suspect by the other group. That's what the Dash 2 amendments does. It just solves one of the problems that may develop in the future right up front. The other, only other thing, and it doesn't need to be in the bill, but as this develops, I think there ought to be a report given to OPAC, since OPAC works in the governor's budget in the future,
yeah,
and simply give a progress report. Otherwise, it's a great bill.
Mr. Thompson, do the Dash Ones get at the issue directly, in the first issue you raised directly enough?
I have not seen the Dash
One. They call for one member representing seafood commodities and one member representing locally based fishermen groups.
Not really.
No.
The sportsmen have a completely different connection. They work through different groups, and it makes it real tough for a commercial fisherman to represent their point of view.
So I've heard.
They need their own.
It does. That is true.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for bringing those issues to our attention, and we'll look forward to working with Representative Roblin on moving this forward. Let's hear from other folks who are here to testify, and I'm going to be using the timer once again, because we have five more people on this bill and four to testify on the last bill. We're going to try to get through everyone and leave not very far from 5 o'clock this afternoon. So, Cheryl Kuhn, Joe Rolliter, and Kurt Melcher.
Go ahead,
Kurt. We'll wait on Kurt. Why don't you two start?
Good afternoon, Chair Cannon, members of the committee. My name is Cheryl Kuhn. I'm pleased to be here on behalf of the Port Orford Ocean Resource Team, which is representative of commercial fishermen in the community of Port Orford. You've already heard some references to it. Port Orford exemplifies in some ways everything you heard about. It is a place where cooperative, collaborative research is going on right now, using local vessels and bringing economic benefits to a otherwise badly depressed rural town that is hugely dependent on fishing. It does not have a diversified economy. It's a true fishing town, and it wants to stay one. I'm here to support the bill. It's very clear that Oregon's nearshore marine environment is one of our most precious natural resources. We're only beginning to comprehend its significance both for sustainable fisheries and the oceans in general. We need to think about the best way to go about this, and this is an excellent start. We're to move forward with an understanding of Oregon's nearshore, there are really four critical things to be done. Some of these are outside of this committee's purview, but they're important to mention. One is the full funding of the governor's recommended budget for the pilot marine reserves and the other sites identified in the OPAC process. The second is to take that nearshore strategy that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife did an excellent job on and move it forward through a new research that is being proposed here. The third is to develop that strong public-private relationship that exists in other states. It is what keeps them going. We need to have that here in Oregon as well, and it can be done without the strings that people have concerns about. And the final part, which this bill addresses, is to assemble that team of folks. And I want to speak for 1 minute about that. I am not particularly familiar with the amendments. I assume this bill is not yet ready to move forward because those amendments are not fully understood by everyone. The representation issue is going to be important. Just as commercial and sport fishermen feel themselves to be worlds apart, so even when you take an isolated, far south coast rural community, that community doesn't necessarily consider itself to be fully represented by fishermen who fish different gear or who are more centrally located. So those are some of the considerations to be worked through. Who are the best folks to bring to it? I hope in the end there will be some at-large seats, because I think the critical point is going to be to bring the right people to this, not just the people who fit in particular boxes. Right now, it may be a little too boxed in by those kinds of descriptions. So we look forward to participating. Port Orford intends to be very actively involved and is very happy to see this go forward.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rolliter. I live in Walport, Oregon. I'm here today representing the Oregon Coast Charter Boat Association. I don't really need to add too much except to tell you that I believe that the boats that will be used for the platform for an awful lot of the research fall into two classes, the commercial boats and the charter boats. We're currently doing quite a bit of nearshore research now. I also think that it's important to understand that commercial fishermen and recreational fishermen look at the ocean in a different way. We see different things, and we bring very different things to the table. I don't think we see the world very much different. It's just we notice different parts of it. So that's all I have to say today. Thank you very much for your time.
That was very well put.
Thank you.
Kurt.
Thank you, Chair Cannon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we provided written testimony here today as well, and I'm going to talk fast because I'm literally in a neck-and-neck race with another hearing next door. I won't spend any time regurgitating what House Bill 3106 would do. I would want to mention that in our world, nearshore typically refers to the territorial sea, which is 0 to 3 miles from the coast. Currently, the nearshore resources off the Oregon coast are very diverse, both in terms of species and the ecology of the habitats, as well as the species that inhabitate those habitats are very diverse. And there are very broad gaps in our data knowledge. We've developed a nearshore strategy that was referred to here earlier, which is an excellent blueprint for working on some of those data gaps. And we think that this task force could we would all be well served if this task force also focused on the important issues of developing a funding stream and opportunities for collaboration on the funding side of nearshore research. And lastly, in my brief summation here, would like to recognize that we have a long history as an agency of working with our coastal constituents, the fishing industry, as well as universities and others in trying to improve the science around our nearshore resources, and we would expect to continue that relationship if this bill is passed and the task force is created.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions for any of the three?
He has another hearing to go to, so I want to wait till the panel is excused.
Okay, the panel is excused. Quickly, and I'll have Lauren Goddard and Lars Robinson come up.
Mr. Chair, I also and might want to ask Arnie after the hearing to think about what is the best way to do these task forces in terms of at-large seats, we might want to ask Representative Roblin about that very thing, either now or after the hearing, because it does seem like if we want the best people, how do we do that? And anyway, we can move on from that.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chairman Cannon and other members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. I'm Lauren Goddard. I'm chairman of the Depot Bay Nearshore Action Team, though I'm here today to speak to you on a personal level. Representing this, we would like to support this House Bill 3106. I'm a charter boat operator working out of Depot Bay, and I can assure you that though there is not an adversarial attitude between charter and commercial fishing entities, I'm glad to see that the separation has been made between commodities and fisheries, but that the fisheries need to be separated further into commercial and sport interests being represented. And that's really all that I can tell you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you. My name is Lars Robinson. I have charter business in Depot Bay for 26 years. I'm also a member of the Depot Bay Nearshore Action Team and also the chairman of the Depot Bay Harbor Commission. And just to keep it short, I am in full support of this bill, and I am here speaking on behalf of my business, not for the Nearshore Action Team. I just want to make that clear right now. This bill would be great for our business and our commercial and sport fishermen, but as you say, we have different needs between the commercial and sports, so this would also help out our local economy, and we have the proposed Otter Rock Marine reserve area just within about 3 miles of us, and I'm sure that it would help economically the charter boats in our small port to prosper and also help out with all this stuff. So I can't say too much. It's already been said, so thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the Capitol today, both of you. It's been a very enjoyable couple of days in Depot Bay earlier in the month, or I guess last month. And appreciate the hospitality I received in your community. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Coming to Salem.
Better weather's coming.
Thank you.
Yeah, actually, very nice weather one of the 2 days. Great. Let's. With that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3106 and open a public hearing on 3123. Representative Bailey, will you tell us a little about this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jules Bailey, and I have the honor of representing Inner East Side Portland, House District 42. House Bill 3123, if you'll excuse the pun, is part of a wave of legislation that is coming down the West Coast. The concept is actually quite simple. The concept here in House Bill 3123 is to prevent passenger vessels, cruise ships, etc., from releasing hazardous material, sewage, into Oregon's waters. We want to make sure that as these ships pass through Oregon's waters, that they are not releasing to us all the things that they have stored up in other states that have already passed legislation such as this. So the concept is pretty simple. We want to keep Oregon's waters clean. We want to keep it safe. We want to keep it healthy. It's a public resource, and it's a public health issue and an environmental protection issue. Now, I do have good news for Representative Gilliam. If you'll read through House Bill 3123, you'll see your three favorite letters spelled out here. And this bill is related to DEQ, Representative, so the wait is over. And I have spoken with the Department of Environmental Quality about the more technical aspects of this bill. As I said, the concept is quite simple. The actual mechanisms by which the concept is achieved are more difficult. You'll see a Dash 1 amendment in your packet, and the Dash 1 amendment is a complete rewrite of House Bill 3123 as originally conceived and has language that is more consistent with the department, at least is my understanding. So appreciate the committee's time in hearing this bill and be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, how far behind are we from other states in getting this done?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, my understanding is that we are, if not yet, soon to become the last.
Just to clarify, the last West Coast?
The last West Coast state, too.
State. Okay, Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note on line 3 and 4 of the Dash 1 amendments, the writer managed to avoid the term soiled diaper.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I'm not sure what you're referring to. Perhaps Representative Smith could help me out with an alternative term. I'm not.
Let's no, I do not recognize Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, my intent was to compliment the writer. Nothing else.
Yes. So where does the hazardous material end up? Let's say it's not. You know, they can't dump in the waters of Oregon or California or Washington, so where is the appropriate place for this to release?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as we start to get into some of the more technical questions, I think I'd like to defer to the department for some of those questions.
Super. Any other questions for Representative Bailey? There was a fiscal associated with the original version of the bill. We don't have one for the Dash 1s. Any commentary, or have you had? I guess have you had a chance to see it,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee? I have not had a chance to see a fiscal for the Dash 1s, my assumption would be that it is somewhat similar to the original bill.
Okay.
But, again, the department could probably answer that in more detail.
Yeah. Is there someone from the department here?
Greg is here.
Oh, Greg's here. Okay, great. Thank you very much, Representative Bailey.
Thank you.
Let's, Greg, were you prepared to testify on this? Well, let's hold on and see if hear some other testimony and then see if we have questions for you at the end, time permitting. But let's call up a group of. Well, let's see if we can take all four. So, if you signed up, and it looks like Maura Sullivan, Gus Gates, Ryan Cruz, and Andrew Kerr, if you would join us. Go ahead.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify here today on behalf or in support of House Bill 3123. My name is Maura Sullivan, and I am a member of Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition. Oregon Shores is a nonprofit grassroots organization that is dedicated to protecting Oregon's natural landscapes, communities, and ecosystems. Oregon Shores supports House Bill 3123, banning cruise ship pollution in Oregon state waters, and thanks the committees for its effort on this bill. House Bill 3123 will protect Oregon residents from degraded water quality that can occur from cruise ship pollution. According to the Department of Transportation, in a typical week, a large cruise vessel can generate approximately 210,000 gallons of sewage, 1 million gallons of gray water, and over 130 gallons of hazardous waste. Complete ban on these discharges, as opposed to resource-intensive sampling and monitoring standards approach, is a simple and inexpensive way for Oregon to protect its water quality. A discharge ban requires less work from our cash-strapped state agencies and is the best insurance against environmental and economic disasters such as contamination of shellfish beds and fisheries. House Bill 3123 closes a major gap along the West Coast in cruise ship regulation. California, Alaska, and Washington all have measures to control cruise ship pollutions in their state waters. Until now, Oregon has been the only state to fail to regulate cruise ship pollution in its state waters. By enacting House Bill 3123 and prohibiting the discharge of sewage, gray water, and hazardous waste, Oregon will join California as a Pacific Coast leader in regulating cruise ship-generated pollution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thanks. Let's hear from other members of the panel and then see if there are any questions. Go ahead.
Chair Cannon, members of the House Committee of Environment and Water. For the record, my name is Gus Gates, born and raised resident of the community of Florence, and I'm here today in my capacity as the Oregon Policy Coordinator with the Surfrider Foundation, representing our statewide membership of over 600 recreational ocean users, as well as the Newport, Siuslaw, and Portland chapters. The Surfrider Foundation is a nonprofit, grassroots environmental organization dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of the world's oceans, waves, and beaches for all people through conservation, activism, research, and education. I'd like to take this opportunity today to thank you, or to speak in support of House Bill 3123 with the proposed amendments, which would establish Oregon's control over discharge of wastewater from cruise ships into state waters and provide for a mechanism to verify that our waters are being adequately protected. This bill is seen as common sense legislation by our membership and is in line with regional efforts to establish a seamless program along the entire west coast of North America to protect these waters from polluted discharges released by cruise ships. Since large cruise ships currently only stop in Astoria and typically stay less than one day, the fleet does not even need to discharge at all in Oregon waters. However, conversations are underway to bring these cruise ships into the ports of Newport and Coos Bay, and that is why this piece of legislation is needed now, before the industry expands. Most large cruise ships have 1 to 1.5 days of holding capacity for all wastewater streams. Although the ships are most often outside of Oregon's 3-mile jurisdictional limit, discharges do occur within the 3-mile territorial sea. These discharges and the subsequent impacts to water quality are a significant concern to the recreational ocean users, such as surfers, swimmers, kiteboarders, as well as seafood consumers and recreational and commercial shellfish harvesters. On behalf of our statewide membership and those that spend significant times in the ocean, on the beach, and for the citizens who enjoy the quality of life provided by the Pacific Ocean and the bounty found there within, we thank you for addressing this important issue here today and for allowing us to provide testimony in support of House Bill 3123 with the proposed amendments.
Thank you very much for being here today.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ryan Cruz, and I am from the Portland chapter of Surfrider. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. In the interest of time, I will be short and just say that I would like to reiterate what's already been said. Personally, I spend as much time as I possibly can in the waters from Astoria to Pacific City, and I eat as much shellfish as I possibly can afford. So this bill hits very close for me. So I'd just like you to urge you to support House Bill 3123. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Andrew Kerr. I am a member and law clerk for the Portland chapter of Surfrider. I also have family that live in Newport along the Central Coast and consider that place, that section of the Oregon coast, to be a surrogate home, period, near and dear to my heart. I also spend as much time as possible in and around the waters of the Oregon coast and feel very passionately about them. I also spend quite a bit of time inland working on water quality issues and have seen just how difficult it is to catch up once an area has already been degraded. So I believe that, and I'm also speaking in support of House Bill 3123, I believe it presents an opportunity for the state to get out ahead of any potential problems and represents a classic case of an ounce of prevention being better than a pound of cure. On that note, I won't belabor any of the points already made, except to thank you for your consideration of this matter and hope that you, too, will support the bill as it moves through the process.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Bailey. I've looked. Do you both have questions? Representative Gillian, go ahead. It's getting late.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thank you all for being here. I was particularly interested in your testimony. We got several surf riders. It's Gus.
Yes, correct.
We don't have the industry here, and obviously we want them to come. You didn't say otherwise. To Astoria, perhaps to other cities on our coast. What is appropriate? I assume, you know, if you're going to get permission to dock with a large cruise ship, there's all kinds of state and local provisions for getting rid of your sewage and your waste and so forth. But what is appropriate? Is there a point where it's okay to dump in the ocean, or is it, should it all happen, you know, when you're in port and it disposed of and processed properly? You know,
Chair Cannon and Representative Gilliam. Our preferred alternative would be advanced wastewater treatment facilities on board of the cruise ships. Many of them currently have those. However, many of them do not, and this is a major issue. Having appropriate facilities on shore where they could release, like we currently have in some of our ports, would be the best way to go about it. However, if that's not available and if it needs to occur, then we would like to see that occur outside of our territorial sea. There's a number of hazardous materials that are also included, oily bilge water, hazardous materials from, beauty products, soaps, things like that, that is a very major detriment to water quality. And so we would like to see that not occur within the territorial sea, and we'd also like to see a well-established monitoring program so that these regulations could be adequately enforced and that it would ensure compliance for those.
Thanks.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for coming to testify. Just for the record, I want to clarify that I think it is the intent to welcome cruise ships to come to the state of Oregon and to contribute to our economic development. The intention with this bill is to ensure that they take the remnants of the good time with them when they leave.
I have just a question, Mr. Gates. I'm still interested in this discharge question because based on your testimony, it sounds like they're discharging just outside the territorial sea, that it's 3 miles. If they're at sea for many days, as these ships must be, and they're prohibited from discharging within the territorial sea, they just go farther offshore and discharge there. Is that your understanding?
Chair Cannon, that would be, you know, one possibility. Preferably further out, of course, is much better. However, instances have occurred in other states where they have simple memorandums of understanding for no discharge. Unfortunately, discharges have occurred, such as the case up in Puget Sound. So this is an issue, and there needs to be adequate protection before the cruise ship industry expands.
Great.
Thank you.
Do you want to add to that?
If I could, very briefly. Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. It strikes me as important to recognize that there are steps that Oregon can take. There are steps that the federal government should be taking and hopefully will be taking. And, of course, other states have already taken. It's our hope, surfrighters' hope, my hope, and other recreational users' hope, that we can do what we can when we can. And, again, this may create more impetus for dumping off the Outer Continental Shelf in federal waters and in international waters. But we can certainly take the proactive step of making sure it's not happening in our nearshore environments where the effects might be more concentrated, more profound, and more directly felt by coastal residents and users.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony today. We will, I suspect we'll revisit this issue. We're not prepared. We don't have the paperwork together to move it today, and I'm particularly interested in finding out whether we might work with the agency to deal with the fiscal that's associated at least with the underlying version of the bill. We haven't gotten their fiscal on the dash ones, but obviously that's going to create challenges if we're required to send it down to Ways and Means because of the fiscal here. So I think we'll plan on doing some more work with the bill and hopefully getting the opportunity to move it along in a little bit. But thank you very much for your testimony today.
Thanks.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3123 and close the House Committee on Environment and Water.